Cannabis Corner. We're gonna launch Cannabis Corner on the show today.
Oh, all right.
We're gonna launch Cannabis Corner.
We're gonna recommend you drugs.
Oh
yeah, today.
Hell yeah!
This could be the intro. Yeah, totally.
420.
Yeah. Today on the program, we'll be recommending drugs.
Let's do it.
I just got back from a little road test. Tried out the new TechSnap music. You guys, you got to try it out in all the different formats. So I had you guys listen to it. You're the only people that have heard it.
Yeah.
And I just went for a little drive before the show. Had to play it on the truck speakers. Got to make sure it sounds good on the road. And I listened to it on the computer speakers and the phone speakers. So I think it's passed all of the tests.
You even tested it on the Internet of Things.
I did. It's playing it through an Echo. I did. So, okay, what do you think? You can tell me now. I'm ready for it.
All I can imagine when I hear it is Wes prancing through a forest.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
I like it.
Did it sound inquisitive? Did it sound, you know, did it sound like...
It sounded...
Witty?
It sounded like how I imagine, like, a comic relief character on a comedy.
Yeah.
How he would sound, so...
IT security is a bit of like a comedy program, so that does fit. Yeah, it's true. Well, there's some logic there.
There's also Wes, and he's funny with everything.
That's true. Except for how he looks. That is a handsome son of a bitch. So before we get into the meat of it, we got a couple of bit of administration to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
I got some follow-up from last week, but I think we got to introduce our special guest this week.
Yeah.
Beardsley, go ahead. Who is our guest this week
on
the show?
You should go down the attendance checklist, Chris, because this is like a classroom, right?
I am doing that, actually. Okay. So, Beard, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Chris, are you here?
Chris isn't here.
Oh, jeez. Well, who do we have filling in for Chris?
we have Robo-Chris.
You liar.
And then there is my girlfriend, Jacqueline.
Now, wait a minute. She is an imaginary internet person that doesn't actually exist in the real world and isn't here, obviously.
Well,
so who is this person?
You see, I ordered her from Mississippi.
Oh.
And they crafted her especially for me. She just got shipped last
I appreciate
week,
that in the,
over Thanksgiving.
I appreciate in the current political climate you didn't order them from Russia. That's good.
Well, I got to go American made.
Well, Jacqueline, welcome to the studio. It's
President.
Good to see you. President, yeah. Jackson? Can I just call you President Jackson? Is that good?
I would rather you not.
Oh, okay. Well, then I won't. All right, fine. Everybody's my fun. So, guys, I have some advice I have to get from you before we go any further. Beard knows this, but I don't know if you know this, Mr. President, but I am searching for a dog right now. I'm in the dog phase of life.
Okay. I think she actually listened to the last episode.
Oh, yeah?
So she might know this.
Oh, yeah? Okay. And... you know, I've been thinking about it. I've been reflecting, pontificating, as I like to call it, on the dog idea. What? What's wrong with that?
I just felt like you wanted to sound a little smarter, so you just threw
it. I made up a word. I made up a damn word.
Except that's an actual word.
I feel like you went and read the dictionary.
I sprinkle those in. I sprinkle them.
He made up a word that's an actual word. That's the funny thing.
I'm a word sprinkler is what it is. I like to sprinkle them in, you know? I like to do that.
That's what I say when I
I'm cognizant of the words that I sprinkle into my sentences, okay? I'm cognizant. Now, so I'm thinking about getting a dog, and I feel like there's a lot to reflect on before you get a dog. And so for the last few weeks, I've been imagining every day as if I had a dog. Like, what would it be like? You know, what would I do if I had a dog today? And I met a dog last night, and I did.
Just at the bar.
You just swiped right on Tinder?
Yeah. Well, it was a little more complicated, but essentially what it came down to. And sweetheart, real nice dog, 5 years old. And you know what? Well, that's debatable. Between 3 and 5, they don't really know.
Age isn't debatable.
No, it's debatable. It's just a number. I mean...
Don't they usually like write down the birth dates of pets?
Well, so on one form they have 3 years, and on another form they got 5 years, because this is a rescue animal.
So split the difference is probably 4.
That's what I figure, right? So something, it's not a project animal anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be set in its ways. It's going to know how to go potty. It's going to know how to listen. Really nice dog. We're in there.
Well, did you ever consider that, on the other hand, since it's a rescue animal? It
could be a huge pain in my ass.
Yeah, it might not have those qualities.
That is totally, that's the role. That's why I was going to ask the audience, what do they recommend I do? Because right now, this is the route I'm going, is like shelters and rescue animals, and then I just spend time with the dog. I try to meet the dog. But it seems like I'm destined to also end up with a project. And I don't want a project. I want a companion. So anyways, The audience has been super helpful on last week's episode. They gave me tons of advice, and I'm just looking for more advice here on how to select the right dog. If I should go with a breeder, if I should go. My current inclination is to go with like a shelter animal, just because it seems like there's tons of dogs. So
shelter.
Yeah, right. Like this seems like the way to go, but yeah. I don't. But then again, I don't want a dog that's going to be a problem dog that's going to have like history for ages. Oh,
yeah, but you're spending the time with the dog, so you kind of know what you're getting.
Also, that's under the assumption that every dog you get from the shelter is going to be a project dog, and that's not always the case.
True.
You don't want to turn away a dog that could be put down the next day just because you feel like it's going to be a project dog.
Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, somebody who's moving and they couldn't bring a dog to their new place, so they had to give it away.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you pop out a couple of kids and all of a sudden these kids are a ton of work and you got these dogs.
And one of the kids has an allergy.
Yeah, exactly. So that's been a thing. You are a pet owner, and you're going to become a pet owner very soon.
Mm-hmm. I also used to own 2 German Shepherds.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How recently?
Whenever I lived in Texas with my parents.
Yeah.
One was a puppy that I raised, and one was an adult dog. And
I got a thing for dogs right now. I got like the softest spot. It's so ridiculous. It's so bad. Okay. So the other thing that everybody always says to me when I talk about getting a dog is, well, you know how much they cost. You know, they're super expensive. They got all these fees. You got all these.
You know what your response should be? I've had 3 kids.
Well, that's true. I've also had a lot of dogs. I've always had dogs growing up. So I've actually, this is a rarity in my life to not have dogs. That's kind of an unusual thing.
Yeah. Dogs are significantly cheaper than children.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You still have things, though. Like, you got pet hotels. You have pet hotels. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, you got to pay for pet hotels or some from time to time. Or you got vet bills. I'm still sitting with it, but I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of weeks I have a dog. It seems like it's going that direction.
On the flip side, you don't have to spend money on new clothes every 6 months.
Yeah, or
diapers.
People are like, the dog's going to eat you out of house and home. I'm like, you have no idea.
Dog food is so cheap.
I spend hundreds of dollars a week on food for my kids.
Yeah.
So. Like, don't even tell me how much a dog's going to cost.
I guess you just kind of have to think, you know, is the love that this dog is going to give me worth it?
Well, that is the thing.
Well,
what am I going for with this dog, right?
Also, bonding time with your kids.
That's actually what's pushed over the edge is, like, the kids would really... Where we're parked right now in Lady Jupe's, we have a huge yard, and it's all fenced in. So I just, like, I picture the kids and the dog just playing outside with the neighbor kids in the fenced yard. It just seems like a win-win.
That's also a factor you need to take into account if you're going to adopt from a shelter, if the dog is friendly with kids. Because sometimes it's only friendly with a adult figure.
Yeah. They won't even let you, some of these shelters, at least the ones we've gone to, they won't even let you adopt the dog until you bring your kids in.
Yeah, until you've...
I mean, that makes sense.
It does. Yeah,
because it's not even just if the dog is okay with kids. It's okay if the kids... if it's the kids are okay with the dog.
Yeah, and how the particular kids interact with dogs and stuff like that. Yeah, it's like a... Like, don't even bother coming in. If you've got kids, don't bother coming into one of these shelters without them because they won't let you take the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know...
makes sense.
That's how it is. And when you get a puppy, it's a little different because when you get a puppy, it sort of grows up in your family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they become comfortable around kids because they're raised around kids. And so that is the difference between getting the shelter animal again
and going to a breeder.
Yeah.
I do think a lot of parents don't think about teaching their kids how to deal with dogs,
I think it's a great opportunity. I think teaching kids how to interact with animals, how to exist with an animal, how to integrate an animal into a family, you have to learn how to intuit what the animal needs by observing the animal. And that, I think, is a good skill set for a kid.
Yeah, and I think it also, it helps kids teach, like, respect for other living beings.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Which can carry back over to people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, if it's the right size dog, what kind of dog wouldn't love living in an RV? Traveling around, going to different places, sitting in that passenger seat.
Right size dog. You're funny.
It has to be there. It can't be big, right? Over 45 pounds, and I think it's too big for an RV.
Yeah, it can't be like a giant Doberman.
It's small. It's like
if it's cute, you're going to have to get over it.
That is a thing. Like, it could happen. It could happen that way.
Well, he's looking for very specific dogs, though.
I am. I want something that's not too foo-foo-y. And I want something that's not too hyped up and energetic and anxious. Like, growing up,
not a Shiba Inu then.
What's that?
Not a Shiba Inu then.
Or a Border Collie, which growing up, one of my favorite dogs growing up with was a Border Collie. Smart, as fuck. This thing knew every family member's name. You could say, go tell dad it's dinner time. And she'd go upstairs and tell my dad with a particular kind of bark that it was dinner time. Yeah, it was amazing. Like, I loved that. And you could just, she could read facial expressions. So she knew when you were upset or when you were happy. Like, she could tell all of that. She could read facial expressions, which just blew me away. Like, to have this connection with an animal. Great dog, but they need like 5+ acres, which we had growing up.
But we're the only intelligent beings on the planet.
Dolphins.
Us and dolphins?
Yeah, dolphins.
Do dolphins cuddle me when I'm sad?
Oh, dolphins would definitely not cuddle you in a nice way. Knowing what I know about dolphins now, I do not find them cute or cuddly.
What do you mean knowing what you know about dolphins now? What do you know now that you didn't know before?
That they have giant bone penises?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Did you not know about this?
No, I didn't know dolphins have bone penises.
They're terrifying.
Like, can you explain, like, is it a permanent erection? Like, can you describe the dolphin penis to me?
No, but
I would like to know more about the dolphin penis.
It comes out, Chris. It's really big and hard and long, but it's an actual bone, not just like blood flow.
Aren't dolphins like very scary with women as well?
Yeah, also dolphins are kind of rapey.
Yeah.
Well, what's the difference? Okay, well, take that out. Let's back up a little bit.
Yeah, well,
they're also apparently the only other living thing on the planet that has sex for pleasure. Which explains why they're probably kind of rapey.
Dude, bullshit. So let me ask you this. Like, fucking apes don't fuck for pleasure. Give me a break. So let me ask you this. So back up a little bit and go, let's talk about the bone for a second. So you're telling me.
Oh my God.
This is like a bone that comes out of the dolphin. Like, it's a perma erection, but it's like retracted in the dolphin and then it is deployed.
From what I understand, yes. It's kind of like spear fishing.
What's the difference between that and, like, you know, a sex toy? I mean, those are hard objects. This could actually be a plus, is what I'm going for here.
It's
like, the dolphin maybe had this.
Yeah, but when you combine it with the rapiness, Chris, it starts being a plus. Yeah,
also, the fact that it's an animal, that starts being bestiality.
Yeah, I'm just putting that aside.
Listen, I'm not going to judge what other people do.
No, I will bring you right back to that. You cannot just leave it on the side of the road.
I mean, if it's a dolphin, it's in international waters, it doesn't follow U.S. jurisdiction.
Yeah, I mean, who are we to judge? I guess I just feel like there's more to be.
It doesn't have a retractable penis.
It's not like it's permanently out there causing like some sort of like drift though in the water. Like, they must pull it up because the dolphin's a spelled animal. Well,
maybe it's like a rudder.
Yeah, well, no, it's not though. Like, because you'd have
maybe they use it to have quick turns, Chris.
You'd have dolphin penis wake if it didn't get retracted.
Have you ever really gotten up close to a dolphin that was horny?
I've never studied the water wake of a horny dolphin before.
Well, that's on the bucket list.
LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Go there right now. Pause and go there. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Sign up for a free 7-day trial for a platform to teach you everything about Linux. It's growing in popularity all of the time. And it's stacked full of Jupiter Broadcasting members, which is awesome because some of the content is forkable by the community. They have instructor mentoring, real human beings that can help you when you get stuck, and self-paced in-depth video courses on every Linux, cloud, and DevOps topic you might know of. And we hear all the time from audience members who are using Linux Academy in their business place, in the work. I can't remember, but just recently, two different people submitted into the show about how when they sign up at a new job, Linux Academy now is just part of the welcome to the company, get started and learn up.
Well, because it's cheap. It's like just this extra little cheap benefit that they can give out and make their employees smarter.
With so much value. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Sign up for a free 7-day trial. Get certification, training, practice exams and quizzes for big tests and course schedulers that can meet the busiest of schedules. Trust me on that. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged is where you go. And there's always stuff to learn, new stuff.
It can even make a dumb Windows user like me smart enough to hang out on Linux Unplugged.
It's a miracle. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. So which one of you is eating the Uncrustables in the studio? I'm going to guess it's you.
Yeah, they're my own. I bought them.
Well, I don't care whose they are. I just noticed a new food item arrived in the studio. Uncrustables?
Well,
I'm a 5-year-old.
She was,
hey, 8. Thank you. My kid is 8.
Yeah, she was silently told that she should get them by the fact that they were already in the fridge from your kids.
Yeah.
She saw them. She was like, I should get those.
It is kind of an amazing sort of convenience factor. But I got to say, you went wrong with the grape. I think the strawberry, if you like strawberry, is the best Uncrustable, the strawberry peanut butter.
Talk to him, because I started to get the strawberry and he was like,
I didn't say anything.
Because you did.
No, no, no.
You yelled at me.
You were too busy. You were too busy yelling at me for not picking what I wanted.
I can't believe I just stepped into this accidentally by asking about Uncrustables.
But it's okay. We split the difference and we got the Nutella ones too.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Peanut butter Nutella, or are they? Is that
just
what they,
Nutella? I
oh,
think.
Just Nutella.
Well, peanut butter Nutella is like.
Why do I keep amazing my damn microphone? Like the first time I've ever podcasted.
Peanut
you
butter
have
Nutella
to have
is
a
great.
A lot of something to drink, or you're never going to be able to talk again with peanut butter Nutella.
Oh, mom, nom, nom? Because it's all gumbos up your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but it's like eating a Reese's peanut butter cup.
I think it's a pretty good snack. I wish my kids are like borderline on it. And I'm like, you guys, I would have killed for something like this as a kid. Just peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the freezer for days. Are you kidding me? And they're like, meh, can you make me something?
That's our age difference, because those existed when I was in like middle school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my they mom would have. Never buy them. So now that I'm an adult, I can buy them for myself.
Totally. Isn't that what happens? When I moved out, it was juice. My parents wouldn't let me have juice.
Mm.
So I'm buying juice, I'm buying pop, I'm buying all this kind of soda, all this stuff I'm getting constantly, like beverages where I went crazy when I moved out.
My entire like food regimen is things I couldn't have when I lived at home.
Yeah.
The reason I have cats is one of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
My mom wouldn't let me have cats, and I was like, fuck you, mom. I'm getting cats now. I'm an adult.
These are my cats. Yeah, it is true. It is one of those things where it's like, yeah, as a parent, I try to be cognizant of that, because
is this your word of the day, Chris?
Every time you say something like that, I get this overwhelming feeling of disgust for something.
Well, now I'm using it on purpose. I try to think of myself and well, if I limit this for my kids, are they going to go crazy with this thing when they become adults? Like, I try to keep that in mind, because I know that's a real thing. One of the things that I think we probably are creating is sugar monsters. A little bit.
Yeah.
Like, we don't let our kids have much sugar, because I think it's the most evil substance. I think it's more evil than any illegal drug we're going to talk about today on the show. And so when it's like, well, you can have a little bit of juice as long as it's matched by 4x ratio of protein and veggies, then you can have some juice. You know, like, I have like this whole system, and it's just too much.
You realize that Dylan is going to start a donut empire?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's going to be like all Angry Birds themed donuts that he got licensing for.
That would actually be pretty great.
That he got licensing for.
Pay for daddy's retirement, Dylan, because this podcasting ain't going to do it.
Also, bring me a dozen donuts.
All right, we got to talk about Starbucks. I feel like we got to talk about Starbucks. We have a Starbucks insider. I'm not going to say any more. I don't want to get you in any trouble.
It's me, Chris.
Oh, Uncle Howie is going to come kill me if you say anything.
We have ourselves an inside line on the way Starbucks works. And today, before the show, I enjoyed myself a holiday Starbucks treat, courtesy of the beard.
Courtesy of me. That was my free Starbucks reward.
You got this?
Yeah, I had stars.
Wow. That really sucks. I was just going to say, I think this is the first food he's ever bought in me. And then you just said you gave it away.
But what she's saying is she used a Starbucks reward for one of them. That one wasn't yours.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this is the holiday turkey and stuffing sandwich. It's carved turkey breast, cranberry herb stuffing.
Come on, Chris.
And a rich turkey gravy on focaccia.
There's celery in there as well, yeah, which is the best part.
You got to give it its full due. It's a panini, Chris.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And the ingredients, the number one ingredient, focaccia bread, which, you know what, is necessary. Yeah. The focaccia serves as a nice, crisp, crunchy delivery platform for what is a stuffing medley. It is a stuffing medley of deliciousness. There's like a gravy and cranberry incorporated
turkey
in there.
Gravy.
And then the turkey on top of it, the sliced turkey. This is a sandwich that you have got to try. If you're at a Starbucks and you're hungry, get a holiday turkey and stuffing sandwich.
I did not think I'd find a good sandwich from Starbucks.
No.
It's actually very filling, too.
It
so,
is.
Yeah, if you're hungry, it's one of the most filling paninis we have, I feel.
You know what the worst thing is?
It's seasonal?
No. Well, yes. I hate that. But Hadia's been trying to get me to go to Starbucks for food for like 3 years. And I've been like, Starbucks?
Well,
Starbucks? You know what Starbucks got for food? That's what I've been like the whole time.
To be fair, most of it seems like it is crap.
That's what I figured. That's what
I
figured.
The best food from Starbucks is bacon Gouda sandwich, that panini. We have the new steak and egg wrap, but you have to get lucky with those because sometimes
I would imagine
it can get overly crunchy,
sure,
which isn't good, or sure, sometimes you don't get enough steak and it's like all egg.
Oh, get out of here with that.
But turkey basil pesto, pretty good.
That seems like that'd be a solid performer.
Mm-hmm.
But what you should do, Chris, is you should pretend you haven't been to Starbucks. You should suggest going there.
And then get those. You're right. She's not going to listen to this.
Score some points.
You're right, dude. That's totally what I'm going to do. Hey, babe, you want to go to Starbucks? Yes, I do. That sounds wonderful. That's it right there. The holiday turkey and stuffing from Starbucks. So I guess after the new year, this is gone?
After holiday is over. So
sons
about
of bitches.
Maybe around February.
Oh.
Yeah.
I feel like I could burn out
January,
on it by then.
February,
I feel like I could eat the shit out of this and burn out by February.
I feel like I could eat those every day for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's how I act for the first month. And then about 6 weeks into it, I start burning out.
Oh, yes. Same, definitely.
Yeah. So this is perfect.
But you're talking to me who has been eating chicken nuggets for 3 years.
Yeah, that's true. That's a whole other ball game. That's a whole other thing. There you go. The turkey and stuffing. Well, thanks, you guys. That was good. Thank you for the treat.
Yeah.
Now, I want to return the favor. So, the president has joined us for this episode, and...
Mr. Jackson.
Mr. President, President Jackson over there. First time in Washington?
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the fucking Northwest.
Thank you.
What do you think so far?
It's very pretty.
It's like living in a forest.
Yeah, which is my kind of aesthetic.
It's nice. Yeah. It's very, you know, very nice.
People around here are different from the people in the South. I wouldn't say they're ruder, but they're just different.
I think I'd say they're ruder.
There are some people that have been very nice. And also, one thing I've noticed, in Mississippi, it's more of a, like, low-income place where I lived.
Oh.
So when I'd go out to any places, the employees there are usually just like, fuck this place, I want to go home. But here, they're a lot nicer. Here, they're more friendly and outgoing, which is something I also noticed in Texas.
When you say, oh yeah, I definitely see that in Texas. When you say here, do you mean up here in Arlington or do you mean in Seattle?
Because I've noticed the same in Seattle and Arlington.
Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah. So what you're saying is like people don't hate their jobs as much?
Or they just know that it's more professional, even if you hate your job, to at least be nice to the customer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one thing about Washington, though, that I've noticed is driving is terrifying.
The worst.
It's like facing my biggest fear every time I get in the car.
She already has major driving anxiety issues. This place is horrible for that.
Well, so here's how I would describe it. So in New York, everybody knows New York is aggressive driving, right? It's going to be aggressive driving. When I say California, you think tailgaters, you think cutting you off.
Endless traffic.
Right. You think really bad traffic. When you say Washington, you don't necessarily have an association yet. But what the association that people are going to start making soon is passive-aggressive driving and complete and utter negligence.
Yeah.
Total negligence while driving.
Yeah.
Like merging on the freeway and getting on the freeway at 50 miles per hour in a 60 or 70 mile per hour zone and not looking once. And just assuming I'm going to move my 10,000-pound piece of metal over and nobody's going to hit me.
The worst part is that
it's crazy.
It seems like it breeds creating that as well, because we've actually slowed down for some people that wanted to merge.
Oh, yeah, it does.
And they're like super scared to merge.
Yeah,
it absolutely does.
I'm
to the
a
point
nice
where
driver.
You get angry because they're not merging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a nice driver and I try to let people in and they're just like, are you sure? Is this a trap? I don't want I don't know what I want to do. I'm just like, get the
right. Again? You're trying to be what in other states you'd call polite driving.
Yeah.
Right. We don't have a term. We don't call it that.
It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist here. No.
We already had a discussion. We're going to put her in a defensive driving class here in Washington so she can get reacclimated.
I do have a tip.
Yeah.
If you're coming to Washington and you got to get through, turn on the classical radio station. It's like 98.1. And it just plays classical music all the time. And pretend that everybody in front of you is partaking in an old, like, 1920s-style comedy. And that all of these fools, it's just like a musical, it's like a soundless movie with music.
Let's turn on a yakety sax loop.
Yeah. You know, just watching these people go around.
That's the hamster dance, Chris.
Yeah, it is. It is. But that's actually more accurate. And you just watch these people and you go, oh, look at how funny this is. Look at these. Look at them struggle. Look at them attempt to drive. Isn't that adorable? And if you take that sort of detached view of it, it's a little easier to deal with.
You think I don't already be like condescending to people driving in front of me without that music?
I know. It does definitely amp it up. But you need that detachment. You need a total detachment.
She is a completely different person when driving. She seems so nice. But when you get her in a car, she swears, she yells, she's angry at everything.
Well,
in the
you're
world.
In your bubble.
And I'm very nice. I'm nice letting people in, but if someone's gonna be like super slow, I'm just like, you're fucking pathetic.
Well, this is a life and death. This is a life and death situation. Yeah. It really is. And I think about that sometimes. Like the other day I was driving down to the studio actually with the kids in the car. And I'm going down the road and I'm like, geez, you know, I'm in a 5,000-pound piece of mass going down the freeway at 75 miles per hour. And if I make one wrong decision, or anybody around me makes one wrong decision, we're all dead.
Why do you think I have so much driving anxiety? That's my constant thought. Mm-hmm. In driver's ed, you know, the class that was going to teach us to drive, we actually had to watch a bunch of things.
Oh,
on
yeah. Just fuck
teaching
you up.
That.
Scare you.
Just
yeah.
completely teaching
yep.
you that.
Yeah, yeah. So. The only way I think you can get through it is this weird sort of egotistical understanding that, well, I'm better than everybody else. I'm a better driver than everybody else. And that's super common in Washington. Everybody thinks they're a better driver. In fact, one of the most common things to do in Washington is bitch about how everybody else is a worse driver.
Thing is, I am the type of person that I can't do that. I always pick out my mistakes and I'm like, well, I could have done that better. Yeah, yeah. But it doesn't seem like anyone else does that here.
No. You just need to turn your music up louder. That's all you gotta do. That'll fix it.
It's to like ridiculous level. So like there was one point where we were sitting in a turning lane. The light was red. The guy behind us starts honking like we're supposed to
keep
going.
Get going, you stupid son of a bitch.
Yeah. Like what did he want us to do? Just drive into the traffic that was coming?
Mm-hmm. He just wanted us to die for him. That's all.
There was another time where there was somebody behind us and we were going slow. We were following the speed limit, Chris. And we were apparently going too slow for him because he passed us on a double yellow line going around.
Oh, no,
corner.
That was my fault because he was tailgating me in a neighborhood and I got pissed off. And when I get like that, I get very passive aggressive.
Yeah, you start slowing down.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know, I don't
you
really
go slow?
Need to...
We'll go slow.
Yeah, I don't really need to go that fast.
No,
I don't have anywhere
no rush.
I need to be immediately.
Well, that's just it. You were going the speed limit, though. You weren't
no,
even, like,
I went
slow,
under
slow.
The speed limit after
afterwards,
a while.
Yeah, after a bit, you start slow. Like, you're going the speed limit for a while and you're like, dude, get off my app. Yeah. All right. Oh, you know what? Let me check the time. I'm not in a rush. Let me just slow down here.
I go just like, 10 minutes or 10 miles below the speed limit.
It really pissed him off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the number one offense. That's the number one offense.
Oh, that was actually my favorite thing, though, him passing me like that.
Yeah, he passed us.
Well, it's a win-win because you get to fuck with him for like a good solid 30, 40 seconds, and then they pass you. And now you no longer have them riding your ass, and you can go about your business.
Yeah, if you want to, you know, put your life in danger by going and
have at
passing
it.
Me.
Enjoy
in that lane,
yourself.
Sure,
yeah. Enjoy yourself.
Like that seems insane to me. Even if you're angry, passing someone over a double yellow line, going around a hard left turn.
I'm actually really proud of that moment.
Proud
see,
of
making someone
you have
that
to
upset.
Understand that you have your average Washingtonian driver. Then you have the few that are woke.
Stay woke, Chris.
You got to stay woke. And they've had it. You know, they're woke. They're alive. They've seen driving in other states. And they come back to Washington and they're angry. And they just can't take it anymore. They just can't take it anymore. And they freak out. They freak out. We have the craziest incidents of road rage. I had a guy that wanted to get in a fight with me. We're driving down the road, and he pulls in front of me, starts brake checking me, and then he pulls a pipe, and he's like, let's do this. He's holding the pipe out the window. Let's do this. Let's pull over and do – I'm going to fight you with my pipe. Now, think about that for a second. If I had pulled over, and I'm willing to take a guy on with a pipe, then the only way I'm doing that is if I have a weapon that outdoes the pipe. Well, what outdoes the pipe? A gun.
Yeah.
So the only way I'm doing that is I'm shooting the motherfucker on the road, Chris, and this guy wants to pull over and go at it while he's advertising his pipe to me.
Listen.
You still can't gamble that, because what if he has two guns?
Yeah, that's true.
Listen, I can take a pipe with my bare fists. Don't test me.
You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking the guy gets out of his car, he comes at me with his pipe, and I just run him over. And then get back on the road. That's what I'm thinking.
Like, there's your fucking road rage.
Like a one merge maneuver, right? Like two birds, one stone. Stone. Like, I run the guy over and I merge back on the freeway, you know?
I gotta say, one other thing about driving here. These roads are so stupidly designed.
Oh man. So weird.
Like, up around the corner, they've got those, like, mergey thingies to go into the opposite lane.
Yeah. I'll give us a mid grade. I mean, it's like your ideal situation is like your Grand Forks, where everything is just a 4x4 grid or whatever, yeah. And it's so basic that like a toddler can figure it out. And then you go to some areas like Texas,
16 lanes of traffic.
You go around in circles. You just go around in circles for days. Like, if you look at Dallas and
to be fair, we've done that here.
Yeah, but literally, go to maps.google.com and put Austin in, and then go put Dallas in, and go put Houston in. There is just circles around the city. Yeah. You just drive in circles.
I used to stay in Houston with my sister.
Yeah.
It's
people like it. People like it, but to me, I can't take it.
Yeah.
In some ways, it seems better, because if you make a mistake, you just circle
keep
around
going.
Again.
That's what, yeah.
Here,
that's,
they have, like,
yeah,
they realize their roads are so confusing that they have built-in places to do U-turns in the street.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah.
And there's somebody here that is obsessed with breakout lanes for turning.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense to me. You've already got four lanes. Let's add two more.
It's trucks and stuff, but yeah. Yeah, it's... So that's the bad part about Washington. You got the beauty. You got the tech sector, which is pretty good. You got, like, you know, pretty decent... modern amenities. It's not like San Francisco or New York City, unless you're in Seattle.
Yeah, unless you're in Seattle.
If you go into Seattle, then it's pretty great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's better than the Southeast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what you do get here is legalized cannabis. You get the legalized cannabis. You get a lot of things that are, in a way, like you get a good mix of liberal and conservative, like if you're a typical U.S. resident.
Yeah. If you want liberal, stay west. If you want conservative, go east.
Exactly. And it's all in one state,
yep.
which is kind of interesting. So I feel like we should launch a cannabis corner on this show.
Sure.
Are you guys ready for this? A little cannabis corner? Because one of the things that happens a lot is people come in, listeners, I won't name any names, but there's probably been, I don't know, 80 so listeners or so that have telegrammed me. And said, hey, I'm coming to Washington. Hey, I'm going to Colorado. And I want to smoke some pot. I don't get all fucked up.
Hey, what's up?
How's it going?
I'm coming to Washington.
Yeah.
I want to get high.
But usually they're like, hey, you know that thing you do in Unfilter? And I'm like, what? You know that last segment you do? This is actually how like 75% of the conversations go. I'm like, are you talking about the high note? Yeah, I want to do that when I get to Washington. They won't actually say it. They won't actually say it.
They're like, I want to do that.
They'll beat around the bush for like a solid 15 messages.
They're afraid that the police are monitoring their messages.
I know. They're Russian Telegram messages, right? And I got to sit here and I got to like fish out what it is they're trying to like get out of me. Like, what do you want to know?
I feel like you should have like an auto hotkey script where you just hit a button in response.
I'm thinking we record it right here in the show.
Okay.
We'll do a little cannabis corner here in the user error program. And if people want some reference, they can refer right here to the show.
This is good for other reasons because Jacqueline has severe anxiety issues and you've mentioned that it could maybe help someone.
Sure, sure. In fact, but you can also go really wrong. Like, you can make your anxiety way worse. So
yeah,
I
think it depends on who you are. My sister used to get incredibly bad paranoia with it. But then there are other people that are just completely fine. My best friend, she's completely stopped taking her medication.
Really?
Or she'd take it once a month instead of, you know, every single day that she would have to, just because she would just smoke once a week and she'd be fine.
No way, really?
Yeah.
Do you want to say what it was? Much. Do you want to say what she was? Do you want to give her that information?
Literally all I know is it was the Weedle. That's all.
Well, she's just smoking a Pokemon.
Well, so when you think about pot, right, you think about some of the stereotypes of pot. Yeah. What do you think of? You think of people that are, whoa, man.
Yeah, super, super baked.
Super baked out, man. I don't want to do anything. I just want to sit on the couch and relax for a while.
Well, that's because usually when people get the legal pot, they're usually getting the strongest stuff they can get because they don't know how often they're going to get it.
When you're buying it illegally, you gotta go for the best bang for your buck. But you also, generally when you're buying pot illegally...
It's mixed with other things.
It's mixed. It's like a bag. It's like a bag of pot because that's what the dealer can give you. He can give you a bag of pot. He can't go and select 10 different varieties. There's no market for that. So it's what they can get their hands on. They sell it to you and you get a bag and it's basically a bag of hybrid. It's got you got all kinds of different stuff in there. And so
you're getting the dregs most of the time.
The biggest thing I could start with is when you're starting with cannabis, is be aware that there are two really dominant variants of cannabis. One will relax you and calm you down and just help you chill out, maybe even sleep a little bit. The other is more mental. It's more energetic. It gives you more creative bursts. It makes your mind move 1,000 miles per minute. It really is more of a cognitive sort of enhancer. And so the difference is indica and sativa. And indica, the way to remember this is indica is in the couch. Indica is in the couch. Right?
Got it.
And that's going to relax. It's going to make you a typical pothead couch potato. Going to chill you the fuck out. Indica.
Are you sativa-ing everything?
Right. Well, or you have sativa, which is sativa achieva. Sativa is the creative, more mental stuff. So if you are more inclined to paranoia, if you're more inclined to anxiety, you want to avoid sativas.
Yeah.
That's the kind that can – and as we legalize this now, we're learning that there are different strains. There's different effects. There's a tertiary sort of branch of cannabis medicine called CBD, which is good for like joint pains. I have a family member who has arthritis. She puts CBD oil on her hands.
Has none of the high goes, effects.
Right. No – doesn't get stoned at all, but her hand pain goes away for like 2 days. It's amazing. So what you want with indica is also if you have like IBS, if you got indigestion issues, if you know you're really all gassy and stuff like that, indicas will help with that.
Isn't there like teas for that?
Yeah, you can ingest it for sure. I wouldn't if you're just getting started. See, that's the thing that's really tricky is the most approachable format of pot would be a beverage or a candy, like a gummy,
a brownie.
That's the most approachable because you're not smoking it. It's not – you don't have any accessories. You just – you grab this. You go to the recreational store. It's 5 minutes from here. You get a piece of candy. You're good to go. The problem with edibles is you don't know generally how strong of a hybrid it is, if it's a mostly sativa or a mostly indica somewhere. What happens is like they got extra plants.
Yeah. Mm.
The grow ops have extra plants. And it's not the kind that are going to sell in a bag. So they make edibles out of it. And it can be a mix. It can be indica. It can be hybrid. It can hit you in a lot of different ways. And it can take up to 2 hours to hit you before you even really fully appreciate what the effects are.
Yeah. So if you're not experienced, you'll think it's not working. So you have some more.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're like way the hell over the line.
Which even knowing that, I do it to myself all the time. I'm like, I know, but I'm like, it's not hitting me yet. It's not. Now over the years, I actually can tell within about 45 minutes, but I still have to give myself 45 minutes, even years of trying it. I have to know, okay, what's about 45 minutes before this is safe? It's sort of like the way you have to learn how alcohol affects you. You have to learn the way ibuprofen and caffeine, like all of these things. When you ingest it, you're going through the process of digestion, working through your blood system. When you smoke it, it's going into your lungs. It's going into your blood. It's hitting your brain much faster. So you get a much more immediate feedback of, is this a good thing and is this the bad thing? And the other thing you get is a much quicker completion. So when you eat it, you could be affected for 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on how long it takes shit to go through your body. When you smoke it, probably 2 hours is going to be the peak for your first time. If you smoke it a lot, it's probably going to be 10, 15 minutes.
Mm.
And that is way more like, okay, I smoked this and I got X result. If you're really going for something that is, I want to govern my own performance, I want to hack my brain, I want to calm myself down, I want to be able to achieve bliss in a couple of minutes without having to get drunk or without having to meditate or without having to see a psychiatrist for 6 years, then an indica can be a great way to do that. And the best way to do it, if you're just getting started, it's the most expensive, is a vaporizer pen. Because you can get a little pen, it charges over USB, you put a cartridge in there, it's nice and clean, you pull on it, it gives you a nice little puff. And then you blow it out. You sit around for 30 seconds. You go, how do I feel? Mm-hmm. And then if you want to feel worse or better, you just stop or start. But if you eat it, it's eat it. And then I'm going to start feeling something in 45 minutes. And from 45 minutes to 2 hours, I'm going to experience something completely different. And then it's going to linger for about 12 hours. That's a really big commitment for your first time trying pot. I wouldn't do that with aspirin. I wouldn't do that with caffeine. And I definitely wouldn't do it with cannabis. So while edibles are the most approachable, I just don't think it's a good way to go. Edibles are like when you're really experienced with pot. You've been trying cannabis for years.
It's a good way to go long term because it removes stuff like the whole inhalation aspect.
Yeah, no, you're not smoking and stuff. Yeah. When you vaporize, see, the key thing about vaporizing is you vaporize the THC just before the combustion level. So you're not smoking. So it is easier on the lungs, and you know, there's a lot of ways to do it now. You can go in there for 50, 60, 70 bucks and walk out with a pretty good setup now, which isn't necessarily hasn't always been the case. And then once you get comfortable with it, you can just get like pills, like little, they're just a coconut oil and THC, and they put them in a capsule and you take them, and Bob's your uncle.
Mm.
But you definitely want to look at the indica stuff for anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're feeling good, you know, like if your anxiety's low and you just want to sort of hang out and enjoy some music, or you want to maybe work on a project or something like that, then
do some art.
Yeah, like paint or draw. Sativa can be extremely useful for that. Mm-hmm. I look at all of this stuff. Like I'm also looking right now at lion's mane, which is I'm really big. This is, I feel like 2018 is going to be the year of me like just fucking with my head, hacking my head, and trying different stuff, trying different supplements, trying different everything, just to try to get to peak performance that I can. Because I've had the realization recently that I think it's kind of childish to think that we can't use this stuff for our benefit. I think it's childish to think that it's only negative side effects. That you know, I think Dare had this really sort of anti-intellectual stain.
Suppressing effect.
Yeah, suppressing effect that it left on all of us. And so there are, just like a lot of things in life, there are ways to abuse things, and then there's ways to utilize things as appropriate tools.
Mm.
And you just have to trust yourself intellectually to say, I've gone too far, or it's not enough, or it's a negative effect. And then you have to trust yourself to walk it back or work it right, or whatever your system is, right? You have to also learn that. And the problem with the programs like DARE and the Don't Do Drugs, that hardline abstinence approach to drugs, is it leaves us completely toolless. That when we end up, I don't know what that was, but there's a machine outside.
Sounds like a bus.
But it leaves us completely toolless. Like when we end up as adults later on and the realities of life has smacked us in the face a few times, and you try a little beer, you try a little vodka, all of a sudden you try different things. You go, well, this had a much different effect on me than what I was led to believe my entire life. And if I could learn how to use this appropriately, I could see how this could be a good tool. But the problem is you go into adulthood, you hit 21, you got no tools.
Yeah.
You got no understanding of how to appropriately understand or approach this stuff. There's no room to have any conversation on it. Like even us having this conversation right now in the show, we're going to get shit. We're going to get people email us in and tell us that we're a bunch of fucking addicts, that we're a bunch of idiots, that we're being unresponsible. Like all of this shit is like this stuff that you have to push against just to be intellectually honest with yourself and try something that may or may not help you. And it's a lot of shit you got to work through first.
That's kind of like why I like you specifically talking about it, because you have like a 10-year recorded history of being a responsible functioning adult. While also, you know,
maybe perhaps smoking cannabis.
Yeah.
Am I going to get in trouble if I tell those people that are mad about this to at me on Twitter?
No, you should. See what they say. What is your handle?
My Twitter handle is at Deancy, like the Pokemon with 2 underscores. At me next time.
Yeah.
I'll favorite it. I'll retweet it.
You know, the thing is everybody has their own experience with it. So I
feel like DARE programs and stuff like that are based more on negative experiences. Like they only look for negative stuff too, and then they compile it and make you think this is a negative thing, this is a negative thing. But it's kind of more of a thing that's based on the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't tell you that because they want to push you towards a certain point, and that's their point.
Yeah, I could do a whole show on DARE, really, because if you get down to what their motivations were and what they were really doing, it's not about the kids. It was about a lot of other things. But I'll just share my story. You know, it was a while ago now, but I was probably, well, let's just say for the sake of argument, let's say it was 9 years ago. I don't know, but it was about 10 years ago. I was definitely like in the heat of my IT career. I probably had 16, 17 clients, lawyers and doctor's offices. I had whittled it down to the most expensive, most high priority clients because that's what paid. And if you're the best skilled person in the company, they always give you the most high priority clients. And I was constantly dealing with these situations that were just almost unfathomable. Like, I get a phone call, Chris, if I don't get this PDF sent out in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to miss out on a $3 million deal and my computer just crashed. What they're really saying is, if you don't fix my computer in the next 3 minutes, I'm out $3 million or whatever. Like, that was a daily occurrence from about a handful of – when you've got about 15 clients, you're hearing about five of them a day. Right? Is that about how many you're calling?
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is bullet in the head, please.
Pretty stressful. And it got to the point where every single morning I'd wake up, I'd throw up. I don't know what was going – I actually still to this day haven't really figured out, but I know it was stress related. I'd wake up and I'd throw up. I'd spend the first 20 minutes throwing up. Well, the way
ulcers?
It would work – huh?
Ulcers maybe?
I don't know. I mean, this is 10 years ago now, so I don't know. Yeah. I did go into the doctor. They didn't see any ulcers or anything like that. And I'll get there, though. And just to give you context at this time, too, like, you know, this was going on for multiple years. This is not just 1 year of my life, right? It started 10 years ago, but it went on for many years after that. Mm. And to the point where after we had kids – and the way it would work is usually Angela would get woken up a dozen times in the middle of the night for the kids. So I would wake up at 5 or 6 when they would wake up, and I would do the morning since to give her a chance to sleep in, mm-hmm. you know. And that meant, you know, I'm up at 6 in the morning with the kids, getting them breakfast, you know, trying to be there. But I'm sick. I am sick. And it got to a point a year or so later, I'm shitting blood. I'm throwing up. I'm going into the doctor's office every couple of weeks, and they're giving me different antibiotics. At this point, they think, oh, you have some sort of viral infection. But what they would do is they would prescribe the antibiotics. Then they would run the lab tests. And then the test would come back a week after I've been taking the antibiotics, negative. Mm. And then I'd come back in for my follow-up. Oh, yeah, well, we got the lab tests back, and yeah, you didn't have that infection. But have you been taking your antibiotics? You know, yes, sir, I've been taking my antibiotics. You know, I really want this to work out. I really want this fixed. I really need this fixed. It's affecting how I do my job. It's affecting my relationship with my kids. It's affecting my relationship with my wife. I really need this fixed. So, yeah, I took my antibiotics. Of course I did. Well, you weren't infected. So, but let's do another screening. Maybe we can try this. And what I was doing is the entire time is I was devastating my
immune system.
My immune system, my gut bacteria. I was devastating my digestion tract, because I just kept blasting it with antibiotics, and none of it was helping. And so I had a family member who had kind of gone through something similar and lived in Seattle, and said, you know, have you tried smoking pot? And I'd gone through DARE. And I had a pretty strong, like, I will never do drugs. I will never smoke.
Well, Chris, pot is a gateway drug.
Yeah, exactly.
You do pot, you're gonna be doing heroin in 2 weeks.
Right. So I said no. I said no. But, you know, I can't really describe, like, when you have diarrhea blood, and when you're throwing up, and then you have to turn around and throw up in a toilet that's full of your own shit and blood. Like, I can't really describe what that's like.
Dehumanizing.
It's dehumanizing, and then at the same time, I've got clients, like, actually, as I'm throwing up in a toilet bowl filled with ass blood, I've got clients calling me about an outage, and I've got kids that want to be fed breakfast.
Mm.
It's super stressful.
I think some of your issues might have been caused by stress and anxiety, Chris.
Yeah. So,
by the way, Ass Blood is a good band name.
Yeah, it is, right? That is. Or a good podcast name. So I got myself one of these whip vaporizers. Because this is way back in the day now. It's this big box. It's got this hot rod on it. And you put a little pot in a glass tube. You put it over that and you pull on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so one morning I came downstairs. And so when I'm getting out of bed, I start having convulsions immediately. So I know by this point, because we're several years into it, I've got about 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get downstairs, I get the thing warming up, and I already had the pot ready to go. And I go do my business. I get the kids out of bed. I'm like, I'm still sick. I'm like, fuck, it's not going away. I'm getting sick again. I'm just thinking about it. Even just thinking about it right now, I start to get sick.
Kind of like a feedback loop.
So I put the little glass tube on this hot rod with this little bit of a weed in there, a little bit of a plant in there, a little green plant in there.
Like an animal, Chris.
And I pulled on it. And within 10 seconds, I felt better than I felt my entire life. I mean, my gut issues went away. And I had gut issues really since high school.
Mm-hmm.
And my pain, like that, like I just got done throwing up. Yeah. And I was about to go do the shitting thing. And it just stopped.
Blood.
It just stopped right there mid. And I went, holy crap.
And it wasn't that you were like high as fuck either.
No, no. And like I was still able to feed my kids. Like I was still able to go off to work that day. Like I had literally zero side effects. Mm. There was not a singular side effect from it. And then that was when I just, it just went, holy shit, I got to research this. And I just, because I had this little bit that, you know, my cousin had given me, and like I was saving it for like a rainy day. I don't know what I was saving it for, but just like, you know, an emergency parachute or whatever. And
how can I do this legally, and how can I integrate it responsibly into my life,
right,
so
well,
I can live?
Well, back then it wasn't legal, but I did then go to the doctor, and I got a medical card, and I got diagnosed, and they had to put a camera up my ass, and they had to put a camera down my throat, and they said, sure enough, yep, you got a problem here.
Well, at least they were looking up close where the problems were.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't a pleasant experience, and I got the medical card, and it made a big difference for a long time, and it... And during all of that, this is before it was recreationally legal, it was a huge moment for me where I realized the narrative on this thing is exactly wrong. Mm-hmm. And where the narrative partially comes from is when it was illegal, you just got a bag of random shit. And it could be laced with something. It could be an upper. It could be a downer. It was a bag of shit. And that was the pot experience for the last 50 years in America. And so that's where our stereotypes have come from.
So the whole kind of pot industry has been kind of more modernized and updated, and there's more information on it.
Mm-hmm.
But people that are against it don't really pay attention to the information.
Yeah, they
but who's that? They, who is that?
They keep, well, the old politicians in Washington.
But it's literally anybody that just doesn't do their research, really.
My ex. Yeah.
Do you want to be held accountable to people that can't be bothered to Google search or that only search the things that confirm their own biases? I don't really want to be held accountable to those people.
The problem is that a lot of those people are in positions of power, though.
Jeff Sessions. Yeah, I agree. And so that's where it comes back to, if it's legal or illegal, you can just sort of self-experiment. And I really feel like the next year for me is going to be a year of self-experimentation and not irresponsible, like quantified, measured self-experimentation. And I don't know. It feels like that's my right as an adult.
Yeah.
And somebody to tell me otherwise is just being anti-intellectual.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of wonder if there's any research on like how... legalized weed being grown here in the States has affected like the Mexican drug cartels.
They're significant. Yeah, it's significantly affected it.
Because, you know, that's something that they've been trying to stop for the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. Turns out the best way to do it is just to make
reduce
it legal.
Well, it's obvious. You just reduce customer demand.
Yeah.
And once you reduce customer demand, they suffer financially. It's basic bitch math. Last.ting.com. Last.ting.com is where you go to get $25 off your Ting account or $25 off a Ting device. It depends on what works better for you. They have a CDMA and a GSM network. All that really matters is that means they have a lot of devices they support. You go to their BYOD page, and then you just pay for what you use. Ting takes your minutes, your messages, and your megabytes, and whatever you use, that's what you pay for. The average Ting bill is $23 per phone. It starts with $6 a month and your usage on top of that. They match it all together with a great dashboard, the best customer service in the business, and I say that as somebody who's tried all of them. It really is the best customer service. Pay for what you use, nationwide coverage, and no contracts. It's about as good as it gets right there. But if you go over to Ting's site, last.ting.com, you can try out their savings calculator. See exactly what would you save. They got a link right there in the front of their page. And then while you're digging around, head over to their blog. They got a post right now on what you can do to stop the repeal of net neutrality. If that's something that's important to you, it's worth visiting Ting for that alone. Last.ting.com.
All right, Chris. So people are fucking dumb.
It's true.
As
we've demonstrated.
And a lot of people like to give you their opinions.
Also true.
So,
and I love all of them, Rikai.
So what's some of the worst advice you've gotten that people have thought were good advice when they were telling it to you?
Oh, like, okay. What's the worst? Okay. So what's bad advice that has been given to me throughout the years? If you just work harder. I think that's a little bit of bullshit. Like, you got to work smart, but not harder. I know that's really contrived. But I actually feel like my worst advice in life was implied, not given, by family and friends about, like, relationships, I'll sum it up. It's happening to me again. It's funny to watch it happen once and then twice. My lady Hadiya and I went to a wedding recently, and all of the family there constantly asked us,
"When are you getting married, Chris?
When are you getting married?" I've been divorced for like 3 years. Like, give me a break. I just got divorced like a couple of years ago. And you know, the thing was, is for 10 years, when Angela and I were together for 17 years total, and for 10 years of that, we weren't married. And for 10 years, every single holiday event and every wedding, when you guys going to get married? When you guys going to get married? When you guys going to, how many kids you going to have? You know, grandma wants some kids.
Well,
grandma wants some grandkids. Well,
Chris, you know, if you don't take Hadiya and trap her in that marriage immediately, then she's gonna get pregnant. She's gonna take it for all your worth.
I guess I should receive it as a compliment that my family likes Hadiya and me and they want us to be married. I guess that's how I should be receiving it.
I mean, at least they're not telling you, don't get married to that bitch.
Right. That would be really frustrating, right? Yeah. I'd be like insulted by that.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm sort of like first world relationship complaining.
I don't know. I feel like you should be insulted in this way too, though. Like, why can't they just be happy that you're together and like live your own life?
And do whatever we want to do and don't even put a label on it.
Like, I feel like that mentality kind of leads to a lot of divorces.
Exactly. Like, it does. Like, because when you're a kid, like when, you know, you're younger and you're going through this for like 10 years, it starts to like, well, maybe I should get married. Maybe.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of pick someone and you're like, well, my family tells me I need to settle down. So you just settle down with someone without really thinking, should I be settling down with this person yet?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like the divorce rate is approaching like what, 50%?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been for a while. So that's, I don't know if that's advice. Does that count as advice? Does that.
I mean, they're kind of telling you to get married to someone like right now.
I feel like it's uncertain. Is, it's like it's unspoken kind of, advice in a way. It's like it's indirect advice.
Yeah.
There's so many things, like especially like around cooking. I could go for hours. But did any come to mind for you?
Play it safe.
Play it safe means keep your head down. Don't upset anybody. Don't cause a ruckus.
Don't take any risks.
Yeah.
If you play it safe, everything will just work out. That's bullshit. Yeah. If you play it safe,
nothing happens.
You're stuck where you are
you
forever.
You stagnate. Yeah, play it safe means just stagnate for a while. Coast. Just coast for a little bit. What's so important? What's so important about you that you need to make a ruckus? Just keep your head down and shut up.
Like, I know that when Jackie was planning on coming out here.
Mr. President.
A lot of her friends or family or people that were around her were like, "You sure this guy's safe? You know, you sure he's not going to like murder you?" Right. Meanwhile, we've been talking for like 2 years.
Well, but you are some internet weirdo.
Yeah.
That's true. Let's be honest.
It's true.
You know, I can attest to that. Yeah.
But on this side, you were the internet weirdo. You were the person that didn't exist. You see, so,
Now I'm just a real life weirdo.
I'm the guy that custom ordered a president made in the USA.
Damn it. Damn right. Made in the USA. Yeah. Although we were kind of like, go for it. That was sort of because, but that's just because I've been through that too. So I know that is so common, the pushback.
Well, even when I like came out here to work for JB, it was kind of a significant risk for me.
Not kind of.
Yeah. I just like went across the country and lived in a studio above my work and worked with these weirdos that did things on the internet.
That's true. And who even like the internet? Like, that's not even a thing. That's just like a trend.
But like a lot of people back home, they were like, "Are you sure you want to do this? This seems kind of weird. And are you sure it's legitimate?"
I didn't tell anyone in my family when I quit IT full time. I didn't tell anyone.
Because you didn't want the bad advice.
I didn't tell him until the Christmas after I'd been doing JB for like almost a year full. Like, I was like 11 months into doing JB full time.
So you could hand them the tax returns and be like, "See, it's working."
It was just one of those things where it's like, I didn't want to have like that doubtful, like, what are you? I didn't want to have that. I didn't want to have that bubble pop.
The nagging in the back of your brain from all the family members saying you're crazy.
That tether that is sort of like, well, but you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to conform.
That's kind of why, like, I came out here and just started working for JB, like, as soon as I possibly could, so I didn't have time to get that doubt.
Yeah, that did happen quick, didn't it?
Yep.
How do you suppose that took what? That conversation was 3 months in the making, maybe? I don't really remember now. But
I think it was offered to me, like, 2 weeks before I came out for the interview.
No, yeah. Really?
Yeah, 2 weeks before I came out for the interview.
You flew out here, and then we chatted, and then you flew back?
Yep.
Where do we chat at Angie's house or here?
Angie's house.
Yeah, because this wasn't built yet, so we couldn't have chatted.
Well, it was
here.
Built, but
yeah, well, yeah, but it wasn't a studio.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then like, I think 2 months, 2.5 months later, I came out here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, that's where I'm getting the 3 months from. Yep. Yeah. Wow. You know, when I look back at it, when I think about life changes, it's really all about how people perceive it. And if you can control the messaging a bit, it helps a little with the family. And I'm not saying manipulate people. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying you just are aware of the bits of information they're receiving versus the bits of information that they're making up on their own. It took me – you know this, but it took me a hard lesson. I had a Facebook account where I thought you know, I would share my new relationship. I thought this would be a good place to do this. Family didn't receive it well. Mm-hmm. They didn't like the idea that I had a new relationship. But that was it was just something that I really screwed up. I really blew the messaging on mm-hmm. that. And if I look at it as a product and how you message a product, I shouldn't have done it that way. And it sort of sucks that you have to do that, but perception really matters quite a bit. It really does matter.
Yep.
Anyways, I think what we have here is like an unfiltered holiday lesson. Be yourself. Go home and be yourself.
Well, does Jackie have any bad advice she's gotten?
I can think of the one thing I thought of is kind of probably not a good topic to talk about. It's getting it's kind of serious.
No, no, it's fine. You can bring us down. I can bring us up after it, so it's fine.
Well, the thing is, anyone with any kind of mental illness, I feel, knows this, but a lot of people, when you're kind of having a panic attack or you're going through a really big depressive episode, when they tell you, oh, just kind of be more logical about things, or, oh, you need to stop thinking about this, just stop thinking about it and it'll be better, or, you know, anything like that, basically just get over it. That's the dumbest advice you can ever really give anyone, because telling them to get over it or to just be logical, just, you know,
it's dismissive.
Yeah, it's dismissive, and it's not always possible. And with a lot of people with mental disorders, I feel if you sit there and give them advice like that, it's going to make them feel like they're, you know, being a burden, or they're,
well,
you know,
or you're kinda being talked down to.
Yeah, exactly. And I just feel like that's the dumbest advice you can give someone. If you really want to help, I feel like you should, you know, walk them through what's happening and not just tell them, you know, just get over it, because, you know, that's not fucking possible.
Yeah,
you're just giving them the dumbest, like, you're basically just telling them, you know, I don't really fucking care.
Yeah,
just can you stop talking about it, please?
What you should do is sit them down and walk them through the process and tell them why the things that are happening and why this can be a good thing, or why they shouldn't panic about it so much.
Mm-hmm. What you're very good at when I'm in a panic attack is you will basically set everything up. You listen to why I'm having the panic attack, and then you will give me basically stepping stones out of what's making me panic,
mm-hmm.
which is very good at. You're very good at that.
I would assume you have to be careful, because you have to respect her intelligence mm-hmm. as you do it. So you have to make sure that you're not saying something that she can obviously figure out on her own.
Yeah.
So that's mm-hmm. must be.
Well, on the same token, like, sometimes you do have to say that stuff because they're too busy panicking
to think
that
stuff out. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
When I'm panicking, thought completely goes out the window. So
it's
even
emotion,
if it's
feeling.
Yeah. Even if it's obvious, like, even if it's something that I'd be like, well, fucking duh, it still helps hearing him say that, because it kind of brings me back to myself and kind of gives me like a little stone to kind of grab onto.
Oh, right. You're right. That
to
makes
kind
sense.
Of ground. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you feel like it's about helping you see a different perspective? Like mm-hmm. Another way to put that is, oh, maybe my perspective is skewed right now.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? It's like letting you see like cracks that go, oh, maybe if I could just shift my perspective.
Yeah. It also helps in the way that when I'm panicking, I get stuck in what I'm scared is going to happen. Like, I get stuck in kind of like a horror movie. And so it kind of takes me out of that kind of like this, I'm literally going to fucking die. Like, mm-hmm. and brings me back into reality. Mm-hmm. Snap back to reality. Oh, there goes gravity.
Isn't it weird how it really is all kind of perspectives?
Yeah.
Like you can you can look at different situations and you can freak out. Mm. You can look at situations and be like, I got this. Yeah. I got this. And you can look at other situations and be like, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do.
And I think it's one kind of weird thing with different human beings is one human being can see it in their perspective. And if they're stubborn, if they really don't give a fuck, that's not really the person you go to if you have anxiety, because they won't be able to understand. You have this completely different perspective. Yeah. So,
I totally know what you mean there, because it's you don't want to be belittled. You don't want to be told that you're being ridiculous, but you do want a rock, like a foundation to sort of like touch back into and help reset the perspective. And it takes time, for me, sometimes I'll get in a mindset. I call it mindsets. That's what I call it. I'll get in a mindset. I'm just like, fuck this shit. All this is horrible. I'm doing horrible. The shows are horrible. All of this is awful. Everybody around me is fucking me. And I'll just get in that. Over the years, I've been able to like say, oh, I'm doing it again. I'm doing that. In fact, I even did it like over the weekend to dinner. I'm like, oh, I'm getting grumpy. I'm getting like in this mindset again. I got to like, I constantly get fucking bitter about being broke.
Yeah.
Because when I did IT, I was making $120 an hour.
Mm.
And so I went from making $200,000 a year to making nothing.
Yeah.
But, you know, my choice. I want to do this. This is what I want to be doing. But every now and then, I can get pretty bitter about the fact that I used to be able to buy whatever the fuck I want, and now I can't buy anything that
I want.
Which
is normal.
And now you can reflect on it and be like, oh, yeah, but I'm not shitting blood anymore.
Exactly. That is actually it. That is where I go. It's like, well, at least I know, that this is the trade that I've made.
You're not destroying yourself.
And it's a better trade. It is a better trade. But I can, every now and then, I can slip into what I call that mindset. Where I can be like, oh, fuck all this shit. This is all horrible. I'm killing myself. I'm working an unbelievable amount of hours a week. And then if I just shift, I can be like, well, I can work when I want.
Yeah.
I do podcasting for a living. I can determine when I come into the office and when I go. If I don't even want to show up tomorrow, I can ask somebody to fill in. Like, it just depends on what perspective I look at it.
I can run the studio for you, Chris.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing to have, because I mean, I feel like in therapy, that's one thing that they really work on teaching you first, is to be able to recognize when you're in that situation and kind of flip yourself into, okay, well, this and this and this is good. Mm-hmm. I kind of chose this.
Right.
And so.
And the game is like finding those, I used to call them speed signs.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
So like I might be like 80 miles per hour, 100 miles per hour. If I can catch it when I'm like at 75 or 60.
Mm-hmm.
I get better and better. And as I get older, I start to catch myself at slower and slower speeds. Mm-hmm. So before I get really fucking worked up, I can catch myself now at 65 miles per hour and I can start working myself back.
Yeah.
But when I was 25, I'd get up to 120 miles per hour before I caught myself.
Yeah.
And I'd really fucking make, and there'd end up being a hole in the wall kind of a thing. I'd be really getting worked up.
Yeah.
I'm 25-year-old you.
Going back to the bad advice, one thing I just thought of while we were talking about this is when you get involved in a relationship with somebody that's really different from you and, the people around you are like, this person is like really different and kind of weird. Are you sure you want to be doing this? But to me, like being involved in a relationship with somebody somewhat different than you is something that you kind of want because it prevents you from getting into, group thinking with somebody that you're involved with where you get stuck in a rut and reinforces bad behaviors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing is when people go, oh, are you sure you want to get in a relationship with this person and stay with them because your tastes are going to change as you grow? It's like, well, yeah, but that doesn't mean they have to change and separate us. We can change together and go along together. I don't get that mindset.
I think it's also one of the things too, as you go through serious relationship commitments, you realize that a lot of the problems I have with my partner actually come down with problems in me.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes my partner pushes those buttons in a way that is perhaps more aggravating than other partners might, and then you just have to decide how much you want to take on, how much you want to self-correct, and eventually you're going to get there. Like I have family members who have been through 5 or 6 divorces and marriages, and then eventually they get. I can see them you know, they're getting up there in age, but they get there and they just sort of, I don't want to say settle, but they sort of get to a point where they accept that, well, at the core of all of it, the problem is my own demons, and I just need to find somebody that I am comfortable working out these demons with. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody that gives me the space, has the tools to work with me to resolve this stuff.
Thing is, I would rather get in a relationship where I know someone would, I would be comfortable with working on those things with,
yeah,
than.
Or at least somebody's not going to judge the shit out of you.
Yeah, yeah. I think that people feel like in relationships, when you have those bad things about yourself, like your inner demons, people kind of act like that's immediately something that's going to separate you.
Right.
Like they don't look at it in a way that these people, whoever you're with, can help you work through those. They kind of act like you're supposed to just be dealing with it by your fucking
self.
It takes
a certain amount of maturity. Feels like the wrong word, but that's the word I'm going to use. It takes a certain amount of maturity on your partners. So you need a partner that can be strong when you're weak, mm-hmm, and you need to be strong when they're weak. Mm-hmm. And if that can line up a little bit, they can really help you through some shit. Like, mm-hmm, if they can remain strong when you're having a weak moment and they don't want to fucking break up with you for it,
mm-hmm,
that's pretty great, because that's being there when somebody's being human is sort of what it's all about. That's, mm-hmm, sort of at the end of the day what it's all going to come down to that. And so if you have a partner that can work with you when you're weak and they can be strong and you can be strong when they're weak, then that's pretty much the basic groundwork you need to just grow through your shit.
Yeah.
And some of that is part of why I decided to be poly, because sometimes you're both going to be weak. And, mm-hmm, if there's other people that can also help you out, well, then you're both allowed to be weak and have crappy times. And maybe sometimes that helps too.
Yeah, that is definitely – that is an interesting element that the poly aspect of a relationship would add, that a stereo relationship doesn't necessarily have. Yeah, that is really interesting too. But then how do you avoid the well, you're having a bad day. You haven't wanted to give out for a couple of weeks, so I'm just going to go spend extra time with X, Y, Z.
Well, you communicate like you should in a relationship.
That sounds very fucking adult, though.
I want to be in a relationship, but I want to be a child.
That's why you get those fucking peanut butter jelly.
Right? It's all about the Uncrustables.
You can't get your stress on the Uncrustables.
All right, we have one more Ask Air here on the show before we get out of here. You want to do one more? You ready for this?
Yeah.
Are we not going to do any of the mumble ones?
Huh?
Or not mumble, Discord?
I'm going to do all of them.
Oh, yeah.
I guess when I say one more, I mean...
one more batch?
This thing.
We have more to get to, is what I mean. And we may cut this next one out, is what I mean.
One more, possibly four.
Hashtag...
I'm kind of really curious about what this is.
Oh, yeah?
You sound so frightened.
Well, I am a little bit. Hashtag Ask Air. What's the most homosexual situation you've ever found yourself in?
Well, let me prefix this with... Jacqueline is bisexual, so it's not so big of a deal
for
her.
Bisexual, pansexual.
So there's a lot so you have like a lot of options to draw from.
Yeah.
How do we answer this question in a way that's legit for you? Because I feel like...
It's kind of hard because I've actually grabbed fucking titties before.
Yeah, well, there you
like
go.
Like I full on grabbed titties.
So have I. All right, well... I'll start, I suppose. And you just can't put any of this in the show, okay? Deal? All right. So, I don't really consider myself a bisexual person, but if I'm put in a situation where there is a more male-to-female ratio, you know, I'm going to do what's required to have a good time. Do you know what I'm saying?
Bi-curious?
Huh?
Not bi-curious?
What's there to be curious about? I'm pretty up-to-date on the dick. I don't have a lot to be curious about. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know how the butt works and I know how the dick works. So
yeah, you know,
no curiosity.
I've already installed the software update on the dick.
You know how yours works. You're never curious about how other people's work?
I'm pretty sure they all kind of work about the same level. You know what I'm saying?
Nah.
Really?
Nah. Well, dicks are different.
Yeah, I suppose there are variances in dicks. I'll give you that.
That's like saying all women orgasm the same.
Yeah, okay. Is it fair to call it a bisexual situation if you have been in a male-male-female situation? Is that a bisexual situation?
Did the dick
touch?
Did
you like it?
There was dick touching, I suppose, because there was double penetration happening.
Did you Did you like the fact that you were touching his dick? Did you find him attractive in a sexual manner?
No, but it wasn't a turnoff either. So, like, it wasn't like I wasn't excited about the fact that his dick was involved, but it also, you know, no big deal. You know, I could take it or leave it.
I wouldn't say that's bisexual because if it's not really like a turn on, then, you know, it's just kind of.
Oh, man.
Now
I feel like
situation.
I'm being left out. Like, I feel like I want to be turned
okay,
on.
Okay, I'm sorry. Just kidding. You're so bisexual.
Thank you.
Yay!
Thank you. Yeah, I did it, everybody. I did it. Yeah. Okay, well, that's as close as I got. That's as close as I got.
I haven't really been involved in any of those kinds of situations, really.
How would you feel? Like, theoretically.
But.
I think he's up for it.
Growing up, like, a lot of my friends around me were bisexual dudes or gay dudes.
I had that experience too.
And, you know, sometimes there was a lot of hugging, so I'm comfortable with other dudes. And
there was growing up, there was sort of just a curiosity.
Yeah.
I won't comment much further because of the current political climate, hashtag Harvey Weinstein. But it does feel like growing up, there were some things that happened. Looking back at them, like, what were those boys doing? What were they? That's a little bisexual.
I mean, I won't lie. Growing up, I've seen some dicks, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen some dicks.
I've come across a few dicks along
the road. I have a
road.
Dick, too, actually, it turns out.
Yeah, I know.
Same.
Yeah.
Sometimes
what?
Sometimes you gain too much weight. It's a little hard to see.
I haven't seen it for a little while.
And then you lose a little bit of weight. You meet a new friend again.
You're like, okay, what's up, bud?
All right. Well, so did you have, before you decided you were bisexual or pansexual, was there like a theoretical barrier you had to break to decide all of a sudden it was okay to be interested in the other sex's parts? Or the same sex's parts, I guess I should say?
When I thought I was straight, it was, I'm not sure how to put this. When I thought I was straight, the barrier that I had to break was,
boobies are nice.
Well, finding out that bisexuality was a normal thing. Because around when I thought I was straight, I felt basically the whole kind of society kind of thing, the societal kind of thing was you're either gay or you're straight and that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and it's a one or a zero.
Yeah, and so what I had to kind of go through was bisexuality is a thing, bisexuality is a normal thing.
A gradient.
Yeah, and then I had to kind of get through that first. And then once I got through that, once I was like, you know, bisexuality is an actual thing, then I was like, hey, titties.
So when you say get through that, was that like an intellectual experience that you went through by browsing 1,000 photos of porn? Or was that like a hands-on experience where you're like, okay, you know what, I've done this a couple of times and it doesn't make me feel sick?
It was more of a kind of thing where I'm the kind of person where I care too much about what other people think. So it was more of a situation where I had to sit there and be like, okay, well, if everyone says bisexuality isn't a thing, but I feel like I am bisexual and I feel like it's a thing for me, then what exactly do I give a fuck about what they say?
So just to make sure I understand. So before you even like got fancy with the lady parts, you were like, I might be curious about lady parts.
Yeah, because I was with I had my best friend and I actually had a huge crush on her. But around the time that I thought I was straight, I thought it was a weird fucking thing.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I'm straight. That doesn't make any sense.
And then once I kind of, you know, went through that journey, I was like, yeah, I actually do have a crush on her because I am into females.
And it's okay.
Yeah.
Did you have shame?
Not really. Because, I mean, titties are nice.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
She actually had pretty small tits, though, so that was weird.
Well, that you know, the thing is, though, is so even all of the straight women I've ever been with have always loved tits. They've always loved tits. Like, all the straight women.
Tits are great.
Yeah, I think tits are just universal.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the principle of design, they are actually just really great. Like, aside from, like, the sexual, like, drives, if you appreciate good design, then you generally appreciate tits and you appreciate a good ass because they fit the general shapes that we as human beings generally – like, I'm not even shitting. Like, the Star Trek Enterprise is designed around the concept that human beings like the shape of boobs.
Yeah.
It really is.
You can relate anything back to Star Trek.
I can because there is a certain, like, geometrical shape that we find pleasing.
Well, it's not just the shape.
So it's more than that,
it's
isn't
also
it? Because
the feel.
Well, okay, yes.
The little bouncy feel.
That's true.
I mean, we did design pillows after them.
That's, But I'm just saying, like, every heterosexual woman I've ever been with really appreciates boobs.
Yeah.
Of course, I go for boob women. But do you think that it's more than that? Like, it must be just more. You're like, oh, I like boobs. But, you know, like, every girl likes boobs.
Yeah. It wasn't just the boob things for me. It's more thinking about being in a relationship with a female and thinking about pleasuring a female sexually besides the tits.
Mm. Okay.
So once I kind of had that stuff in mind, I was like, yeah, I'm fucking bisexual.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I'm gay as fuck.
I thought about, like, you know, when I broke up with Angela, before we were even married, we broke up for a little bit. And I thought about it. I was like, oh, man, I wish I was gay. Because it would honestly be easier. I had a roommate at the time, and it would just – and he was kind of effeminate, but that's sort of aside. It would just be easier because we both like sci-fi. We both like World of Warcraft. We both like eating at Outback all the time. We both like beer. Like, it would just be so much easier if I was a gay man.
If I could just deal with the dick, then I'd have a perfect partner.
But I have zero – I have, like, zero sexual drive towards the dick. Like, if I'm in a sexual situation with a woman and I'm presented with a dick, I can deal with it. But I have no desire to seek out dick. So I say that. Well, I know.
You're not a dick seeking missile?
No. I'm not a big dick seeker. Not really looking for dick. But
you're not a dick fisher.
Is that the That's good. Is that the you think that might be the defining characteristic of from pansexual to bisexual, is you actually are thinking about sexual pleasuring, like you're thinking about the other organ? Because that to me is like, that's the line I don't cross. So maybe I don't consider myself bisexual.
I mean, it all depends on the person, but
am I just
like
casual
that
sexual?
So
what am I?
Well, I mean,
as long as I'm fucking a pussy, I can have a dick involved and it's okay. I don't really care what the dick does, even.
I don't think that you necessarily need to involve the sexuality part at all, because, you know, I also am involved with somebody that is asexual and I'm still in a relationship with them.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. There's a difference between romantic and sexual, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. I guess that's a whole, that's a whole nother ask error.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole, if you were actually answering a question here.
So you may not be sexually bisexual, but could you be romantically bisexual? Well, I guess something.
Yeah, I mean,
biromantic.
I guess so, but then it's a whole nother revisit of the what is a relationship? What defines a relationship? What makes it a special? Like, it's a whole nother revisiting of that topic. Because what do you define what Angela and I have? We work together on a daily basis. We have three kids together. We talk all the time. But we're definitely not romantically interested at all. Like, I guess. But then what makes that different than a pansexual relationship? In fact, I've even had sex with her. I've produced three kids with her.
Pansexual relationship. Wait.
Well, whatever he just like with what do you consider the relationship you have that is a relationship but is a non-sexual relationship?
That's just a romantic relationship.
Yeah. It's asexual relationship.
Asexual. But. So there's definitely no romanticism between Angela and I. So I guess that's one defining quality.
Yeah.
Aromantic.
So yeah. If there's
there's also aromantic people that you can be like physically involved with. And
so romance.
Not
so
have
like
romance.
Romance and connection and empathy and the other things that are the typical of a relationship, but just not the sexual part.
But you can also have the opposite and still be in a relationship. Like you can not be romantic with someone, but be in a sexual relationship with them as well.
God, it's fucking
It's very fluid.
It is. And it feels like we inherently wanted to. We want to
put
define
everything in categories
or label.
Yeah, exactly.
It. But then at the same time, it's like it's the definition of something that shouldn't be defined or labeled.
The thing is, some people seek comfort in the labels. Like, I know that I didn't want to label myself as bisexual or pansexual, but in some ways, I kind of seek comfort in that because it means there's more people out there like me that have those labels that can say, hey, yeah, I'm pansexual too, or I'm bisexual too, and just, you know.
Well, it does make it easier to create a subreddit, let's be honest. Right?
I thought that the whole time I was saying that. I was like, don't say subreddit. Don't fucking say subreddit.
It's true, though.
Now, I feel like most of the people listening are familiar with what bisexuality is, but could you explain what pansexuality is? Because I feel like that's a lesser known thing.
It is out there,
pansexuality is more of an umbrella term. Pansexuality, and the reason why I kind of fluctuate between bisexuality and pansexuality is depending on the person. A lot of people think bisexuality is the same thing as pansexuality. If you're bisexual, you can be pansexual. Some people think it's separate. To be pansexual, it's more you're not really thinking about the body parts.
You're into people.
Yeah, you're just into the person. And a lot of people think bisexuality is just if you're into either dick or vagina. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of depends on the person. Some people think if you're bisexual, you're just pansexual. You don't mm-hmm. give a fuck about the body part. Some people separate them, which is why I kind of fluctuate between it, because you know you don't want to sit there and be like, oh yeah, I'm pansexual, and someone be like, excuse me, bisexual is the same fucking thing, you know? Well, I just yeah. don't want to start an
well,
argument.
Isn't that annoying? You feel like you're getting lost in labels.
Well, yeah.
Well, because you've got the whole spectrum of romance and you've got the whole spectrum of sexuality, and then there's also the fact that you have to also factor in the spectrum of gender, because mm-hmm. you know there's yeah. different varying groups.
I know one reason why I say bisexual / pansexual is mostly just because I'm nervous about kind of pissing off someone that's like that thinks that they're the same thing. But honestly, in my brain, when I found pansexuality, like I kind of went through life thinking, oh, yeah, I'm bisexual. But when I saw that pansexuality was a thing, I was like, yeah, I really don't give a fuck about the genitals. I really care about the person and their body as a whole.
Yeah.
So it kind of spoke more to me. But then I have to keep going back to that, like, I don't want to piss someone off.
So maybe you're pansexual then, Chris.
Well, that just seems like I'm into humans.
Yeah.
And if you're a really good human, that
it doesn't matter if you have a dick or a vag.
That's probably the way it's been. And it's only until Western societies where we started categorizing things up.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's where I start to get a little, I don't know. It just seems like.
You're someone that doesn't like the categories or the labels.
That's what it is.
Which is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
And you know what? It's not just for like relationships and sex. It's for everything.
Yeah.
Everything. I feel that way. Don't label it.
Yeah. That's why I was with religion. I was very just like kind of floating around in space because I didn't know what to label it. I didn't really want to label it.
Yeah, yeah. Religion feels like it's very much the same thing.
It's okay if you don't want to label it. There are people that seek comfort in labels, but there are also people that seek comfort in not labeling whatever the fuck.
Politics, religion, drugs, sex. It all feels like it's kind of the same thing there.
Yeah, like I tend to label myself, but most of my labels are non-labels. Like I'm agnostic, which means I don't really fucking know.
Interesting. If you're gonna, so you take labels, but you take labels that are sort of...
Non-labels.
Wow.
To be fair, agnostic is more of a label for someone that
hasn't committed yet.
Well, no, someone that knows that there's a higher power, but doesn't know what it is.
No, agnosticism is more like there's the possibility that there is a higher power, and you don't necessarily know if there is or not.
It feels like a pussy position. It feels like on the fence.
But what did I just say? You just said the exact thing I said.
No, you said that. You said that there's definitely a higher power. The way I feel
I'm sorry. I should have taken a more backseat approach to this.
No, it's waffly.
There might be.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Is it's a waffly sort of pansy ass.
You fucking waffle.
I can't take the time to dedicate a couple of years to really think about this, so I'm just going to play it easy. That's what it is. You won't be religious and you won't be atheist. You're agnostic.
He's about to punch you in the fucking face.
No, it's what it is. It's just...
You've literally described my entire life outlook on everything.
Tell me it's not that, though. Like, really. You know, as somebody who's gone to church his entire life, except for, well, I won't get into it, but tell me it's not that.
I mean, it really
seems like that.
I look at
it. And I'm not a super religious person, by the way.
In the opposite way. I can't say there's not a God. There's no proof that there definitely isn't a God.
Yeah, I also can't say for 100% certainty there's not a Santa Claus or a Tooth Fairy.
Well, except you can, because you know for a fact that somebody made them up. We have documented evidence of this.
But I also know for a fact, at least if you're going by the Christian, I mean, I also know for a fact that somebody made up that. I mean, that's, what's the difference? Seriously.
That was before recorded history.
The Bible. I'm talking about the Bible. Yeah. Like, that's...
That's like one of the first books, though. There's nothing to counteract that.
Okay.
One of the first books.
Jesus. So anyways, yeah. So I have my Jesus white guy religion.
But on the other side, I can't say that there definitely is a God because there's no proof of that either. So the choice I've chosen...
You're just hedging.
I've chosen...
You're hedging.
Shut up for a minute. The choice I've chosen is that I'm going to try to live a life that I think is good.
Yeah.
And if there is a God and he's not an asshole, then he will see that I tried to live a good life and he will judge me based on that. If there's no God, I had a fucking good life.
You really think there's a God?
I don't know either way.
Really?
It's possible.
Well, I think that's a good hedge. It's a good solid hedge, and it's basically the hedge I've followed for most of my life.
But you're giving me shit about it.
Well, you know, it's extremely egotistical. I'll say this, and I don't mean to be disrespectful. As somebody who literally has gone to church his entire life, it's extremely egotistical to assume there actually is a God. But I'll just leave it at that. I don't need to go any further into that. I you know what? If people want to get upset about it, then that's their own interpretation.
See, I'm perfectly fine with people believing what they want to believe as long as they don't try to push it onto others.
That's actually my thing. Mm-hmm. That is completely my thing. It's like whatever works for you is the right thing, is the right answer, 100%. And that's why sometimes church has been the right answer for me and sometimes it hasn't. And that's, you know, I think it's we all sort of create our own thought technologies to work around.
And on the topic of whether I think there's really a God or not, I feel like there are a lot of people out there that are very smart people, like these really insanely smart scientists that still believe in religions. And if they can't figure out if there's a God or not, who the fuck am I to try to decide that?
I
think that's more of a lesson in human nature than it is in science. But I'll give you that.
I just want to say we went from tits and dicks touching to, so do you really believe there's a God?
Well, you know, that's welcome to user error.
my whole thing is I do have a set religion. I do have a religion, but I also believe that every other religion out there that's different from mine, I'm not. My kind of weird belief, and I know this is a fucking naive belief, but my weird belief is I feel like everyone else that has a religion, maybe it's actually a thing for them. Like, maybe it's a real thing for them. When they die, they follow this religion because it's something
that... Well,
that
would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's a really naive thing. And I know it's probably not fucking true. It's stupid.
No, I'm 100% with you pretty much.
Because, think about it. If your soul seriously believes in this thing and you die and you believe your soul is going to do da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, why can't it be true for that specific person?
Yeah. Why can't it? Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah. I totally agree.
You know what? That makes even more sense if we're all a simulation, because then we just all have separate afterlife simulations that we go to.
The more you think about perception, the more you watch. Like, if you want a lesson in perception, just watch what's happened since Donald Trump was elected. And I hate to rob from the polarizing Scott Adams, but you have two movies. You have the right and the left that are playing out right now. The same people are watching the same screen, but they're seeing two different movies.
Yeah.
If this hasn't been the biggest life lesson that reality is each our own, we each perceive our own reality. We create our own reality. And when we die, that reality may die with us, but we create our own reality. And whatever you believe is true because you believe it, because you create reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think part of the reason I gravitate towards being agnostic is because of like anxiety, because just thinking about there being absolutely nothing after death just sends me into a panic.
So are you scared of death in that way?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely scared of death.
Mm. Hmm. That's interesting. I would find death to be an incredible relief. One of the best things that could happen to me would be if I died.
But honestly, when I was Christian, death was fucking terrifying to me.
Really?
Because in my opinion of the whole Christian religion is if you are not doing everything
right, you're constantly being judged.
Yeah, you're constantly being judged, and there's a chance that you can just die.
And if you die while you're being judged poorly, you're fucked.
Yeah. So that is one reason why I'm not really Christian.
You better make sure you got like 80% like good things and like only a small percentage of bad things in your life.
Yeah, it was just fucking stressful. Like,
you guys keep talking for a minute. I got something to show you.
What? Okay. All right.
Okay.
I guess I'll say this. I find comfort in the idea that I could die tomorrow and everything goes away. Like, I worry about my kids and I worry about Jupiter Broadcasting and I worry about my family and all of that, but none of it would be my concern. Like, none of it would be my problem. It would no longer be the purview of my domain and things that I am constantly managing. No longer am I spinning a family plate, a kid's plate, a business plate. It's no longer my plates to spin.
Mm.
And that, to me, feels like a huge relief in a sense. Dead or not, it seems like the way to go.
So
it seems like I can't wait for death, to be honest with you, in some respect.
That is a depressed person's mindset.
I don't want to die. I don't want to commit suicide. But if I were in a car accident tonight, I would be okay with it.
So if you were depressed, that would be really fucking bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you wouldn't be okay with it, but only because you have kids.
Yeah. I mean, I should definitely clarify. In fact, it brings me to tears to think about my kids having to hear about the news of me dying.
Yeah.
If I didn't have kids, I would have no regrets about dying.
Yeah.
So we got this thing that I'm about to hand you on the front
door. On the door,
like
somebody came. But did they do the knock knock? Or
we weren't here. All I saw was a fucking heel mark on the porch, and then that, and I was like,
let me guess. Before I look at this, was it the local Baptist church?
Yes.
It always is, guys. It always is.
But it's a perfect example of why I can't ascribe to certain religions.
Number one
is
recognize your condition, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God.
But read what the real world explanation of that is.
No one is good enough to go to heaven on his own merit. No matter how much good we do, we still fall short.
So no matter how good you do in life, you're still super fucked unless you
go
ascribe
to
this.
You go to church.
Yes.
You gotta go to church for this. Yeah, that's sort of a hard sell, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a bit of a hard sell. You gotta go to a church that doesn't have quite the hard sell. Number two, realize the penalty for your sins. This is like a hard plastic.
It's long as fuck, too.
This is the most expensive, like, hang on your door I've ever seen. This is like 10 times what, like, the pizza place, your local pizza place, pays for. This is like laminated. This is like some real shit here. All right. Number two, realize the penalty for your sin. For the wages of sin is death. Romans 6:23. And then they give you a modern definition, which is,
fuck you.
Just as there are wages for good, there is punishment for wrong. The penalty for our sin is eternal death in a place called hell. That is some sobering shit when you come home, right? Got your lady over. Welcome to Washington. By the way, you're going to hell. You like the vagina? You're going to hell.
We just got back from a good day out looking for apartments.
It's just like they're fucking scaring you into coming into their church.
Yeah, I just feel like this is not going to work long term, right?
Just to clarify, I have no problem with any religions. Believe what you want, but don't try to terrify me into joining your religion. That's a good way to get me away from your religion.
I will give you this. I bet we have a bunch of listeners that practice faith that do not think this is the way to get people into religion. That said, what the fuck? Like, could you imagine, like, so if this isn't working on you and I, imagine my kids, another generation. This is going to be laughed at. This is going to be mocked. And they're going to lose out on, what do you call it? It's not attendance. It's not your parish. It's your flock. I mean, their flocks are going to diminish. Whatever they want. Like, this is no good. This is a Microsoft-style 1990s Linux is a cancer-style sales tactic. Yeah.
But when I think about it, if I was a kid and I read that coming from where I came from, that would have fucking terrified me. I would have been like, we need to go to this church right now.
Would you think
I was
it was
terrified.
True? I guess you might. I guess you might. Especially if it's really well produced. It looks really good. This is a laminated, well-designed. It's got a fall sort of theme. It's got graphics. It's got a good back. It's got a map on it.
There was a heel on the fucking porch, a heel mark from the rain.
This is a pointy-ass
heel.
This is designed by a graphic artist, too. Don't kid yourself.
See, I think, if/when I have a kid, I am going to lay them out the options and let them decide for themselves.
Mm. You know, that's how you'd like it to go. That is how you'd like it to go. What you find out is that friends and family in your life try to influence them outside of your purvey when you're not around. When they have them for a weekend, when they have them for that day, they try to go all in on trying to convince them on whatever their particular persuasion
is. Honestly, I think if any of my family members did that, I'd be fucking furious.
What do you do though? Because like you're in
you cut yourself off from them.
Well, you kind of do, but like say you're in a hard up situation and you need like family member. You know, you need family member Jane. You know, Aunt Jane's got to fill in for you because you're going to go down to this thing.
Can't relate.
You get like in these hard up situations where like you need somebody to watch your kids every now and then. It happens, especially when you got three of them for like 8 years. Like every
can't
now and then, and then like you give them, and then they come back and they're like, "Well, Dad, you know that the way of Scientology clearly says that all of this is just an illusion. And if you would just subscribe to the thought of Scientology, you'd be much happier." I'm like, where the fuck did that come from?
I'm a little background. I don't really. If I were to have kids, I wouldn't go to family members for babysitting or anything because I'm not very close to any of my family members.
I kind of wish sometimes I wasn't too.
If I did send my kids to a family member, like if I by some chance was like, okay, I need, you know, Sarah to babysit my kids and she were to teach them anything like that, I would stop fucking letting them go over to her immediately. I wouldn't deal with it. And And I know this is going to get a lot of shit, but I am I'm the type of person where even if they're family members, if they do something like that to me or if it was to be like done to my kids, I would just cut them off immediately.
Yeah.
I'm that type of person.
I don't mess with her too much.
You know, the truth is, I've always been surprised. Like it sneaks in. It does sneak in. Like my kids ask me all the time, "Dad, why do we give a pledge to the allegiance at school?" What do I say to them? The U.S. government wants to brainwash you? I pledge allegiance to the flag. You know, like, what do I say to them?
It is fucking weird that America does that, though.
It is weird. And like, what do I answer to that?
Because they make you do it, and you have to do it until you're grown up.
he knows that. He wants to know why. He wants to know why do I have to say this every single morning?
You could create the Eagle Fairy and just be like, you're just praying to the Eagle Fairy so it doesn't swoop down and take
you away. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. That should be so ingrained in my brain that I hate the fact that it exists.
Did they ever get rid of the under God part? Because I know there was a lot of debate.
Yeah, I pledge allegiance to the flag of America. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, under the republic for which it stands, one nation under God.
But there was a lot of debate on removing that.
Yeah.
They very specifically do not say which God, though, just so they can cover most of their
under
religions.
A God.
That works for me, actually. My God is Rick. One of my least favorite things about life is paperwork. Because paperwork is nothing but busy work. You fill out a bunch of paperwork, and then another hairless monkey takes that same paperwork and enters it into a SQL database. Why not just let you enter it directly into the SQL database? Why does there need to be a middle person who takes the things that you've written out, reads them, and then enters them into a database?
Especially when you're doing it online?
Yes.
Because that would make life too easy, and that's not allowed.
I hate it.
No fair.
when I'm like, you know, like when I was buying Lady Jupes or this place, like filling out the paperwork for that, it just, I can't help but get a little mental because I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm filling out 15, 25 pages worth of information, and the only thing they do, having been on the other end of this, is you have a low-paid employee who sits there and goes, okay, well, let's see, on page two, they answered this. Let me go ahead and just fill this in here. And they just sit there and they spend 4 hours entering into their computer.
Don't worry, Chris. They will get rid of that human eventually. They won't make it in a completely digital process, though. They'll still print it out and then they'll do optical character recognition on it so they can still screw it up.
And then there's no fact-checking. So, like, say you're filling something out. And why not have it say immediately, hey, this is going to have you get rejected. Would you like to correct this mistake?
Yeah.
Why not do a little bit of logic checking in real time as you're filling out the form? You know what I'm saying?
It's funny that you say that, Chris. So remember last week I was telling you how we were signing up for that apartment. We had to fill out all this paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what made me think about this.
Yeah. One of the things that we apparently had to do was we both had to apply separately for some reason. even though on my application, I had to put her as living with me and her income. So they had the information to do a check on her as well, but they didn't do it because we had to apply separately. But they never told us this.
And so did you...
And the sign-up never told us this, so we lost out on that apartment.
It's good, like... thing is, the woman that I was speaking with, the property manager, she felt really bad, and she told me about another apartment that was literally in the same area as that one.
Okay, so there could be another one.
Yeah, I can just apply to that one tonight.
But isn't it like, why isn't there something in the process that goes, hey, by the way, before you hit submit, I see that you've put another adult above the age of 18.
Yeah.
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 You should fill out a form.
Yep.
And just flag it right then before it's ever submitted, before you ever have to wait around for 3 or 4 days to get rejected.
Yeah, they flagged us for all the other required fields, but they don't tell us that we have more work to do.
You guys might have to get to the point where you do, depending on how this next one goes, have you considered doing like a blitz and going for like 3 or 4 or 5 places at once and then just seeing... sit down and like answer all of them, get all the paperwork out, right? And just go fill it all out at the same time, like put the same information over and over again and just send it all out.
The problem
that
with that
costs money.
Yeah, the problem. Yeah, because it's $40 for each of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, $40 for the background check?
Yep.
Yeah.
So you'll have to apply for them to tell you made a mistake.
So it's $40
here.
A pop.
Yep.
Honestly, just
per person.
Paperwork.
So $80 per application.
Which for some people is like, what's the big deal? And for other people, it's like, Jesus, dude, that's like a tank of gas. That's by the way, that's a tank of gas for my truck right there.
We apply,
that's a video game.
We apply for 10 places, not sure that we're going to get any of them, and that's $800.
Yeah.
Gosh, what a racket.
Yeah.
What a racket.
The thing with paperwork is just...
doesn't cost them $40 to do that.
The thing with paperwork is just, it gives me... I've actually had actual panic attacks filling out paperwork, just because it's so stressful, just filling out all that stuff. And then some stuff it's like asking you and you're like, why do you even need that information? Because now I have to go through all of this shit to find out the information that doesn't fucking matter.
Right. You're never going to use it.
Like, it's just such a fucking like clusterfuck of, I'm cussing multiple times.
It's very frustrating.
It drives me
crazy.
And with my ADHD and me trying to fill this out, it's just such a big, huge thing that just sends me into a panic attack.
It's like a huge project. It's like this huge project that somebody's just dropped in your lap and you're like, well, how about you just let me in there? And if it doesn't work out, you just kick me out in like 3 months and we'll just call it good.
Yeah, it's
Can that be the system?
Like, they want it to be as stressful for you as possible. And I know that's probably not the case. I don't think that
it does kind of feel like it's an elimination process.
Yeah.
Like, you're signing up for some sort of reality show.
Yeah. And I know no one's sitting up there with, like, the paperwork like, I hope this causes a panic attack. But it feels like that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing is, a lot of these places use third-party companies, so maybe they are.
This is not the same thing, but, you know, I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I found a dog. I fell in love with this dog in a way that I haven't connected with an animal in a really long time. It was stupid. And then we brought the whole kids in there and the whole family fell in love with this dog. And then the place just decided, they review all applications at once, and they decided to give it to somebody else. So we called them back and we said, well, why did you give it to somebody else? Why did you give somebody else the dog? You know, we're just curious, because we didn't want to go back there and have the same thing happen again, fall in love with another animal and then just be declined.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at it and said, well, you know, no reason. Well, you know, you guys actually, you look like you guys would be a great family for this dog. Well, then what the hell where do I go with that? Like, so it's just this process of like, you fall in love with a place,
mm-hmm.
right? You start visualizing what life could be like in this place. And then somebody like reviews an application, and because of a technicality, some paperwork technicality, just say, no, not for you. Not for you. Can't have this apartment. Not for you. You know those life plans. You know all those things you decided. Nah, not for you. No,
it's just, it feels like it's luck at some points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to be the first one on there, and if you're not the first one on there, that's one thing that's gonna just, you know, fuck you over. You have to
like sell yourself constantly. You have to make sure all the I's are dotted, all the T's are crossed.
To
just
make
perfectly.
Sure, like, you suck their dick just perfect,
just right, the way they like it. It does feel like
you
that.
Fondle the balls a little bit,
if they like that, and you gotta know. And if you fondle the balls and they don't like the balls fondled, well, then you just lost the place, or the dog in my case.